Recorded Books presents 10 Things Every Child with Autism Wishes You Knew, 3rd edition, revised and updated by Ellen Knottbaum, narrated by Stephanie Cozart. Preface. When Children's Voice published my article, 10 Things Every Child with Autism Wishes You Knew, in 2004, I couldn't have anticipated the response. Reader after reader wrote to tell me that the piece should be required reading for all social service workers, teachers, therapists, and relatives of children with autism. "Just what my daughter would say if she could," said one mother. "Screams wisdom throughout every word and sentence," said another. The article traveled from website to website around the world, crisscrossing every continent except Antarctica. The sheer volume of interest and the diversity of the groups who found it relevant humbled me. They included hundreds of autism and Asperger's groups, but also support groups for chronic pain, obesity, assistance dogs, inner ear disorders, homeschoolers, religious school educators, knitting circles, food retailers. "I have a strong sense that your message crosses over to many special needs," wrote a social worker in the American Midwest. 10 Things quickly took on a life of its own. Why was it resonating so loudly? I decided that it came from the fact that the piece spoke with a child's voice, a voice largely unheard in the rising uproar about autism. The often tumultuous dialogue was, and still is, productive and welcome. But what could be more ironic than that the subjects of the discussion are often exemplified by the inability to express and advocate for themselves? I had seen several articles that took related approaches, 10 Things Teachers Want Parents to Know, or What Mothers Wish Their Children's Teachers Knew, What Dads of Autistic Children Need to Know. When my editor, Veronica Zisk, presented me with one such adult-to-adult piece, I asked, "Who speaks for the child?" "Write that piece," Veronica urged. My son Bryce had been formally diagnosed at age 4. I felt fortunate that his voice had been heard, thanks to committed teamwork among family members, school staff, and community resource workers. I ardently wanted his level of success to be the norm, not the exception. The original article, and later the original edition of this book, flowed from that. Individual and collective attitudes about autism form under the influence of the language we choose in defining it. The incendiary and provocative remarks and opinions, whether intentional or thoughtless, commandeer our attention. We may respond to them, we may despair of them, we may choose to ignore them. But it may be the squadron of subtleties and nuances of language flying under our radar that does more to impede the development of healthy outlooks about a child's autism. Throughout the book, you'll be asked to contemplate how the language of autism shapes your perspective. It will help you view autism from angles you may not have yet considered. There are also a few things you won't see. You won't see the word autism capitalized in this book unless it's at the beginning of a sentence or part of a name or title. We don't capitalize breast cancer, diabetes, glaucoma, anorexia, depression, or other conditions that don't include someone's name, like Asperger's. Capitalizing autism makes a visual statement that assigns it an authority and power it doesn't deserve. You won't see these words used to describe a child with autism.
Sample complete. Ready to continue?